This is Casey Currents. I'm Susan Wilson.
And I'm Alex Smith.
People who are transgender, meaning that they identify with a gender different from their biological one, face a difficult road to self-acceptance. They endure bullying and higher rates of discrimination in housing and in the job market. But less obvious is the psychological toll that being transgender takes.
According to the National Center for Transgender Equality, a startling 41% of transgender people in the United States have attempted suicide. This statistic is part of the reason why Stephanie Mott, executive director of the Kansas Statewide Transgender Education Project, is so involved in educating the public about transgender issues. She shared her own journey recently with Susan.
The very first thing I remember knowing about myself was that inside I was like my sisters, and outside I was like my brothers. I don't know that I felt like I was trapped in the wrong body or anything like that. It just wasn't who I was on the inside.
You were born Stephen Mott, am I correct?
Yes, that's the name that my parents gave to me.
So what was that like for you as a young child? How did it affect school or your relationships with parents and siblings?
Well, I learned at that same age, at 6 or 7 years old, to live my life inwardly. You know, where I couldn't, you know, let anybody know what was going on inside, and I couldn't talk about it, and I couldn't express myself as a girl. The exceptions to that would be, you know, I had two sisters when I was young, and I would borrow their clothes when I got the chance, but I would have to hide that. I was leading a double life by the time I was 6 or 7 years old.
Junior high and high school are times that can be very difficult for people in general. What was that like for you?
Well, I was blessed to be born into a loving home, and my mom was the basis for anything I know about unconditional love. And I was raised on a little farm outside of Eudora. It was a beautiful place to grow up. My dad was a good man. It was a great place to grow up. But at the same time, I was you know, not able to be who I was, and having to hide who I was, and understanding that there was something that people believed was wrong with people who were like me. And it seemed actually as though that it was more difficult as time went by. Every day it got more difficult.
What do you think made it more and more difficult?
You know, something about having to hide who you are that innately tells us that there must be something wrong with it. And so there was this concept of believing that there was something wrong with me. I can tell you that as a child, at 9, 10 years old, I spent hours sitting in the stairwell of our home looking through every volume of the Encyclopedia Britannica trying to find what was wrong with me. Hmm. Not something that described what was going on with me, but what was wrong with me. As I got older, I began to understand that the people who loved me, the people I loved, believed that people who were like me, they didn't know that I was transgender, but they believed, and I was aware of this, that they felt like that people like me were an abomination before God, and that was very difficult for me to deal with.
Now, did at any point when you were younger, did your mom or dad realize that something indeed was different, and did you ever talk to them about it?
This is the only thing I ever felt like I could not talk to my parents about. I talked to them about everything else that was going on in my life, but somehow I knew that this was something I couldn't talk to them about. And I think they knew that there was some kind of something going on, but they really didn't know what it was.
You entered KU, right, at around the age of 17 or so?
I did. My first semester at KU, I was 17 years old. You know, I did fairly well. Life was much harder, like I said, as time went by and as I became older and understood that, you know, this was not something that was going to change. I was never going to, I thought, be able to live as a woman and then the fear that somebody would find out and shame of being something that God didn't approve of and those things. But still, there was a lot of other good things in my life which allowed me to do pretty well.
What were the good things?
Well, my family, you know, and my church, I had some friends, not friends that knew anything about who I was on the inside, but people who at least accepted me as the very quiet person that I was.
Now, around this time, you discovered alcohol. What did alcohol do for you at that time?
Well, it allowed me not to have to feel the shame and not to have to feel the fear and not to have to feel the disconnect and not to have to feel the anger and just not have to deal with the reality that seemed so impossible. Just allowed me to escape from that.
What was that life that you imagined you'd have to live?
Well, I'd have to pretend to be somebody who wasn't me. I think the way I would tell about it is like entering into a play. And you enter into the play in the morning and you assume the part of this character that's been assigned to you. This character is assigned to you on the basis of your biological sex, but it's not really who you are. So you enter into the play in the morning and you play the part of this character, this boy that wasn't me, and growing into a man that wasn't me. And you do it every day. And at night you come out of character and you dream for a little bit that maybe it'll be different someday. But then the next morning you wake up and you enter into the same play and it picks up where it left off the night before. And you do this day after day after week after month after year after year. And it just gets harder every day.
Now, at what point did you get married?
I got married the first time when I was 20 years old. I thought that was what I was supposed to do. I thought, you know, I have to live as a man. This is who I am. This is who I have to be. Even though I knew on the inside that's not who I was, that well, then if I'm going to be a man, I need to do things that men do. And thought maybe that would somehow help me find something. I don't know.
So how did it go?
We were together for about a year. That was at the same time when I was starting to drink very heavily as well. And we were divorced after about a year.
But you tried it again, right?
Well, I was still, I thought for a very long time that there was no possibility that I would ever be able to live as a woman, that I would have to live as a man. And I was just trying to be a man the way I understood what that was supposed to be like. I don't think you can build any kind of relationship on a lie. And my having to pretend to be a man, which is what I was doing, was a lie about who I was. And there was no real chance for me to be the person that I was supposed to be and to take part in life with joy and happiness. And I continued to drink and actually used this many, many years ago, but used drugs and in an attempt to try to hide from that reality still.
Things really took a bad turn. You lost your job. Of course, you were divorced. Tell us about that period.
Actually, in 2005, I became homeless, really not doing much of anything besides just being very much lost in my alcoholism and believing that eventually I would die and the pain would stop. And then at that point, when I became homeless, I asked my sisters, both of them, if I could move in with them in Lawrence, where they live now, and they both said no.
What did that feel like? To have sisters not help you in your time of need?
Well, I mean, my sisters and I have always, you know, loved each other dearly. And I think that they did that because they loved me and that they knew that if they kept helping me, that I would never find a solution to my problems, whatever they were at the time. And I guess maybe it turns out that it was the most blessed thing that could have ever happened to me, because it was at that time that I made the decision to do what I needed to do to be able to live as a woman.
Tell me how, at that point, you conquered the alcoholism and got back on the path of trying to reconnect with who you really were.
Well, I ended up in Topeka at the rescue mission, the Topeka Rescue Mission, quite frankly, because I knew that they had a connection with Vallejo Behavioral Health Care, which has a drug and alcohol program, but also has therapists for other behavioral situations. And I thought maybe if I went to the rescue mission here in Topeka, that I would then be able to get into the drug and alcohol treatment program and then hopefully eventually be able to see a therapist about my gender identity.
Well, you know, a lot of people go to alcohol treatment and doesn't always work the first time. But at this point, you were really ready for change, right?
I really was, and you know, some things fell into place for me, and I did get to go to Vallejo, to the drug and alcohol treatment program, and then a few months after that, I got to see a therapist about my gender identity and start trying to figure out exactly what I needed to do and how to do that, And then in July of 2006, I got invited to a church where the friend of mine who asked me to come to this church told me that there were other transgender people at the church. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe that, you know, there's actually transgender people in a church. And I had to go.
Now, when you met with the therapist, because I think there are a lot of people who might be struggling with that issue and they think, well, most therapists aren't even going to understand this very well. What did the therapist tell you at that time that was really helpful and healing?
Well, actually, she didn't know anything about transgender. I don't think she'd ever worked with a transgender patient before. But what she knew was how to make me comfortable talking about what I needed to talk about. Mm. And she was, you know, she just created an environment where I could talk to her and I could start sorting through the different things. And then we learned together about the different things that I needed to know.
It was in church, in fact, that you first showed up as Stephanie.
Yes, it was this at Metropolitan Community Church of Topeka. And well, I went the first time as Stephen. And I met this other transgender person, and it was the first time I'd ever known that I was talking to somebody who was transgender. And she looked like a woman, and I thought, oh, my God, I can actually do this. I can actually transition. I went back to the church the next Sunday, and the pastor did a sermon on 2 Corinthians 5:17, which is, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, they are a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. And I was so sure that he was preaching at me and telling me it was okay with God, that I could transition, and that was okay with God. That was the first time I'd ever believed that at all. Then a couple of weeks later, I went as Stephanie, and, you know, I was met with love, and, you know, the kind of love that Jesus talks about in the Bible, the I have some love, you look like you could use some love, here it is, no strings attached.
Yes.
And I, you know, I got to be Stephanie in front of God and everybody, and it was okay, and it was beautiful, and it was amazing. And I sat down in the sanctuary, and I looked up at the cross, and I felt truth and self in the eyes of the Lord for the first time. And Stephanie was born. And I just haven't looked back since then. It's just that knowledge that it was okay to be who I was, and that I could do that, and that there were people that would help me. It just changed everything. Not long after that, one of the people from the church asked me to go speak at a high school gay straight alliance and tell my story. And I went and I spoke, and I was very nervous, and I spoke for about 5 minutes, and I thought I did a horrible job. But when I got done, one of the students came up to me, and a young transgender teenager, and said to me that I had changed her life. And I was thinking to myself, you have no idea, but you just got through changing my life as well.
I want to talk to you about one of your experiences with the healthcare system, because studies show that transgender people face a lot of health disparities within the healthcare system. Can you talk a little bit about your experience?
Transgender people do experience great healthcare disparity. A study that was done in 2011 and by the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force and the National Center for Transgender Equality showed that 28% of transgender people have been turned away for just plain basic medical health care. As in, I'm a sick doctor, will you help me? And the doctor says, no, I won't, you're transgender. And not transgender-related health care, but basic health care. But after I started my transition and was taking hormones, I began to have breast development, and learning about the journey, I discovered that it was necessary for me to have a mammogram after about the second year on hormones. I went to have my mammogram very, very afraid of how I was going to be responded to and whether or not that, you know, I was going to be embarrassed or what, or, you know, I was 50 years old when I started my transition, and so my breasts are not typical, probably quite, but they're still, you know, I'm very pleased with that, but I was afraid of how I would be received. Turns out that I was received very well. The technician was very kind, and we talked a little bit about the health disparities, and she made me very, very comfortable. But at the same time I was experiencing this fear, I was also experiencing this joy then I was getting to do this very much woman thing of having a mammogram. And so the whole experience was just fantastic, and especially with the way that I was treated by the technician. She did a great job, although I know of a number of friends who, I have a friend who when they decided to transition, that their doctor fired them, said that they wouldn't see them anymore because they were transgender.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, have you completely transitioned at this point?
I was able to have my surgery in May of this year in Bangkok, Thailand. And so, yeah.
Huh. Why Bangkok?
Because it was $10,000 instead of $20,000.
That's a good answer.
Yeah. You know, I would much prefer to be able to have it in the United States, but it's just not covered by health care. My health insurance policy has an exclusion in it that says that they won't pay for anything related to a sex change, including complications from a sex change surgery. So if I had problems, those would not be covered by insurance either.
And I trust that your experience, your healing process went well?
It's good, yes.
That's very good.
Yeah. There's something a little bit different, too, that's changed with the Affordable Health Care Act that is commonly known as Obamacare. The Health and Human Services has said that gender identity is covered under the umbrella of sex when it comes to the anti-discrimination clause in the Affordable Health Care Act. And it doesn't mean that the insurance has to pay for transgender-related medical care, but it does mean that doctors can't any longer legally turn away a transgender person for just basic health care.
So let's turn to your life's work right now. Because of what you went through, you've made it your life's work to really educate the public and assist other people going through the transgender journey along the way. So tell me about the organization that you're executive director of, and you founded that organization, didn't you?
Yes. I realized that if I wanted to be able to speak at a wider audience about what it's like to be transgender, that I would need to have more credibility. And so I reached out to some people that I knew across the state of Kansas and said, let's all meet in Salina, Kansas, and at the library and talk about whether or not we want to create a statewide organization. And we had people from pretty much across the state that showed up for that first meeting in August of 2010. And then we decided that we would make this organization. We would incorporate as Kansas Statewide Transgender Education Project, which we also call K-STEP. We decided that our mission would be to end discrimination against transgender people and their families in Kansas through education. And we've since then done more than 200 educational presentations, interviews, and interventions and different things across the state.
Now, as far as questions you get or reactions you get, any surprises or things that stand out as you've been doing this education?
Well, the most common misunderstanding that people have is that the transgender is somehow the same thing as gay. And, of course, it's not. And generally speaking, people are like, that's gay, right, when they find out that I'm transgender. And I'm like, no. Sexual orientation is about who you love. And gender identity is about how you identify with male or female, who you are. And that's the most common thing. One of the things that happens from time to time is that I'll have somebody ask me, how do I reconcile my faith with the fact that I'm transgender? And there's a concept somehow that I believe that God made a mistake, and that by living as a woman that I'm correcting that mistake. And I don't believe that. I believe that God created me exactly the way that God intended to create me. And that there are a lot of things that God does that I don't understand why they're that way. Some of them very beautiful, and some of them they're very difficult to understand. But I don't know why God does so many different things, and I don't know why God made me transgender. But I think it's really important for people to have the right to believe that there's something wrong with me, if that's what they want to believe. And what I try to do when I do an educational program is not really about trying to change their mind about how they feel about who I am. but it's more about trying to expose my humanity. And I think the better job I do of exposing my humanity, the more difficult it is for someone to justify discrimination.
Topeka's Stephanie Mott is the executive director of the Kansas Statewide Transgender Education Project. She speaks nationally on transgender issues and is a columnist for Liberty Press. If you missed part of Casey Kearns today, you can catch individual stories or hear the whole show online at kcur.org. And we've got a podcast. Find us on iTunes.
Coming up, the son of an area Sudanese lost boy takes his first trip to Sudan. This is Casey Kearns.